working to feed the hungry and near homeless in Jacksonville. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a good weekend out there. We are always live at 9, and make sure to catch our podcast on iTunes and through our app. Just ahead, a closer look at the new My Neighbors project in the heart of the city as we look at the challenges of the working poor all across the First Coast. You can get on the line right now and join the conversation. 549-2937. Then later, Cole Pepper on the Jaguars' big win in Indianapolis, plus a live in-studio performance by L.A. favorites Manhattan Murder Mystery, a preview of their show tonight in historic Springfield. All of that ahead, but first this hour, it started out as a different kind of food bank program. The My Neighbors Project began as a way to help homebound people needing extra food and support on Jacksonville's east side. But then organizers saw that many low-income residents they were trying to help had far deeper needs than just getting that hot meal. They were losing their homes, and worse, all from missing one tax payment or failing to pay the city's stormwater fee of $150. Just one missed bill, one missed paycheck away from devastation. Now, we focus regularly on the problems of the low-income and working poor in this city on this program, and so do others. Just last week, the local United Way released a report. It found that one out of every three people in this area, in Baker, Clay, Duval, Nassau, and St. John's counties, is struggling to make ends meet. These are folks who are often working. They have a job, but they struggle to afford the basics: housing, food, childcare, health care, and transportation. They take home just a little too much salary to qualify for assistance programs, but not enough to get by. We begin the hour this morning with a closer look at this issue and the My Neighbors initiative as we welcome its creator, local activist Nick Thompson. Nick, thanks for joining the show.
Howdy.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions and thoughts about the working poor in Northeast Florida? One out of three people in this area. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. So you're a local activist, and you have been doing community work for some time.
Yes.
Let's talk about My Neighbors. You began that recently. What is My Neighbors?
Well, My Neighbors was started because I had, of all things, I had a person who just wrote me and said, you have people you know in the city. Can you help me? Because I had storm damage to my roof, and the city just blew me off. Well, then I realized after that she needed help with food, and she needed help with other things, and she's disabled. And a lot of the problems are the seniors and the disabled are usually the ones who mostly don't get a lot of help. You've got Meals on Wheels and things like that for the seniors, but for a lot of the disabled people who are not able to have that, they need help. So we just sort of started like collecting stuff and taking it to her and to a few other people. And then the next thing you know, it grew and it grew and it grew. And our test program, we ended up doing like 30 people with two people doing the work. And it was just way too much. Mm-hmm. So we scaled back for a couple of weeks or a couple of months till we could sort it all out. Mm-hmm. But it showed, like you were saying, it's exactly what you were saying, is that there are so many that are what we consider the working poor. They make just enough. They can't get SNAP. I know a person who works.
SNAP is food stamps.
Food stamps. He works just enough where she qualified for $18 a month. Well, after rent, electricity, and whatever, and transportation, $18 a month, doesn't buy a whole lot of food. But then there's other. I told you it's been a while. Then there's. But there are food bank programs in this city. But to me, they're not what they need to be. Some of them, you can only do it once every 90 days. Well, that's great, but you got to eat more than once every 90 days. Some you have to get a ticket. Some it's just. So what we try to do is we try to create a thing where we don't want you to stay on our program a long time, but we're there to fill in. And we try to give them what they want or what they need, where if you go to a food bank, you usually get a box or a bag, and it could have stuff in there that you aren't going to eat. But if they can say, hey, look, I'm a vegan. We try to create something that's just for them. And we get stuff from other places, other things. We buy some of the stuff. People donate food. So it's helped. It was helping like 25 different people. But like I said, it got to be too much for just two people to do.
And then you realize food wasn't the only issue.
Food wasn't the only issue. Yeah. Then you have, like you said, transportation. JTA in this town is good, but it's not as good as it could be. It's hard for some people to get to certain jobs. They've sometimes 2 hours to get somewhere. So we need to work on that. But the other problem, too, was we've noticed an alarming rate of people who are losing their houses to tax sales, because if they miss one tax payment, a prime example, someone that we did research on lost their house for $425. And so
because they didn't pay the tax.
And then the problem is then the city adds fines and fees, and suddenly that $425 can be $7,000. Well, if you can't pay $425, how are you going to pay $7,000? And then you've got the predatory people who go out and buy up these taxes, and then you end up, if you drive around the east side or you drive up on the north side, you see a lot of empty houses. Well, those houses were taken on taxes or on foreclosures, and they're not being utilized because they're sitting on them using them as equity. So that makes no sense when we have so many people who need homes that we allow this to happen. The city and the county needs to try to work with that. I've also found out recently that if you make an arrangement with the tax collector and you have to pay your taxes on installments and you miss one payment, it reverts back into.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not, you know, you should have some sort of leeway there. You know, you have people who owe this city, you know, thousands and millions of dollars who got a grant or didn't do a job that they were supposed to do, or but nothing happens to them. But the working poor lose their houses.
We're talking about the working poor of Northeast Florida with activist Nick Thompson right now, and we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, the United Way's recent report on this used a method called ALICE. It stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained Employed, and it looked at people who are working just above the poverty line, but they're the population you're talking about, Nick, and they found that nearly 3 million Florida households are in this bucket. 30% of Floridians cannot meet the basic cost of living where they are living. Here in Duval County, here's what's exacerbating that.
Mm-hmm.
32,000 Duval County households are headed by a single mother. 47% of those single mothers are below the poverty line. They just can't afford the basic costs of living. And when you talk to other nonprofit initiatives, what they'll tell you, too, is that Hurricane Irma has exacerbated a lot of the existing problems. People are struggling. They've lost jobs, homes, and vehicles, or they've just been set back from the storm in
yes.
some way or other.
Well, the prime example of what that happened was what's happened up on the north side there, Ken Knightley Drive or whatever, I can't remember the name, where people lost their cars, their houses. They couldn't get to work. So now what do they do? And there's no program out there that's going to help them get back on their feet. And some people, what makes me mad is when people think about people who are the working poor, they think that they want a handout. A lot of them just want a hand up. They want someone to help them get back to where they need to be. And yes, there are ones out there that would just rather sit and do nothing and blah, blah, blah. But I'm looking at the ones that are the disabled ones who can't work. You know, if you make more than a certain amount, you can't get SNAP, even on disability. I have a friend who is on disability. They took away a SNAP because he made just enough over where that he can't have SNAP. And he has two teenage boys. That makes no sense to me. So that means he has to go to the food bank programs.
Okay. What are your questions about the My Neighbors program and the new report looking at this area's working poor? What are your stories out there? 549-2937. Elo is on Beach Boulevard. Hey, Elo. Good morning. Hey, Elo, you're on the air.
I just wanted to point out a lot of people are having difficulty and their situations are probably a little bit more complicated than mine, but majority of people are having difficulty with insurance companies right now. It seems like they're just postponing their claims, and some of the adjusters and some of the inspectors that come into your house are not trained well enough. So, for example, my situation, we have difficulty with our house where from the slab there's water coming through. And I've been trying to get the insurance company to send somebody who knows what they're doing to at least try to fix it. I can't afford to fix it myself. A lot of people are still struggling with insurance companies. If we could emphasize with insurance companies in any way to maybe expedite, that would, you know, that would make it a lot easier for everybody. I'll listen to it on the air.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Elo. Nick.
And I've heard stories like that, especially after Irma, that the insurance companies are just dragging their feet, and people, you know, you got people who don't have roofs right now, and they're getting water damage. And FEMA is coming, and they come out. They've been doing a little bit of work, but it's mostly the insurance companies that are just making everyone's life nuts. And he's right. We need to work. The city needs to put more pressure on the insurance companies to say, look, you know, we got citizens here that need to be handled, taken care of. You know, we don't need to worry about some of the other stuff that we were worrying about right now. We need to worry about that.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Here's a tweet for you from Phyllis Staines. She's a well-known local realtor around town, I think with REMAX. You mentioned a little bit ago about people losing their homes because of one missed tax payment and how people scoop up all those homes. She tweets the show, tax deed sales are not just happening on the north side or the east side. They are happening all over Jacksonville. It's an increasing problem. Let's talk a little bit more about that phenomenon.
And that's actually very true. I mean, you've got, unfortunately, I can't do 828 square miles. It's just, the city's too vast. I know for a fact that it's been...
You're
hitting,
a big guy, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's been in Mandarin, it's been in Bay Meadows area. It does happen. It's because exactly what we were talking about. You
take me through the process. A person misses a payment.
A person, okay, if you miss the tax sale, let's say you just bought your house. You missed this year's taxes. Mm-hmm. What happens is the county then sells a tax certificate. Someone buys that tax certificate. Then they hold on to it for 3 years. You have 3 years to pay it off. But it accrues interest, it accrues blah, 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 blah. After 3 years, they then can sell that at auction. Someone buys it, they own your house. They can tell you, for those 3 years that they own that tax deed or the tax certificate.
You're still in your house.
You're still in your house.
You don't have to worry about it.
You're on borrowed time. Yeah. Exactly. But after it's sold, every month, the county has at least one tax sale. You can go online. You can see all of them. This month's tax sale was 33 pages of houses.
And opportunities for those that clearly see, oh, I can pick that house up for a song. I can flip that house. But meanwhile, the person that was sort of struggling on the edge of the poverty line is out of their house.
And the thing is, some of them don't flip them. Yeah, you might get a flipper that's going to do Mandarin or Bay Meadows or the South Side. But up here on the North Side, you're up here all the time. You drive through here. There's houses that they're all boarded up that... Those are the ones that either someone bought on taxes or, believe it or not, the city owns. The city says, we don't want to be in the real estate business. But if you check the tax records, the city's in the real estate business. They own houses. They own lots. And try doing business with the city to buy anything. It's a nightmare. They've got two
people. Have you tried?
I haven't personally, but others have. They have like two people in the real estate department, and everything has to go through the council. Then the mayor has to sign off on it, which I've never understood why the mayor needs to sign off on anything like that. But, you know, that's just how it is in this city. And so,
strong mayor form of government. As a former Chicago resident, Nick Thompson, you, like me, are very familiar with strong mayor forms of government.
Yeah. There's a difference between strong male forms of government and never mind. We won't get into that right now that's the one thing is that if you had people who were going to actually buy these places and turn them back into something that people could afford to live in, but when you just sit on them, we have how many homeless people? How many people that could possibly go into a place that are working? We have a lot of people who work who are still homeless because they can't afford. There's no real low-income housing in this city. It's getting, if you look at the statistics, it's getting more and more expensive to live in Jacksonville. It used to be one of the cheapest places in Florida to live. Now rents are starting anywhere at $700 to $800 a month. And that's even in areas that, I don't know if I want to live here. But in housing too, even the houses, you can't find a house for cheaper than most people. So we have to, we need, that's one of the major things is that we really need to start working on some lower income housing projects that can, and I'm not talking about projects. I'm talking about, let's quit. Bill Guilford said it best.
The city council, former president of the city council.
He said it best in a meeting one day. Let's quit building these McMansions and let's go back to building shotguns. Because you don't need 6,000 square feet. You might only need 950 or 1,000. And that's, and all these empty lots we have, we could be doing just that.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with activist Nick Thompson about a new report looking at the working poor of the First Coast. That's one in three people. Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? What are your questions about My Neighbors? That's this new initiative. We're going to share a little bit more about that right now. The number to join the show, 549-2937. So you started My Neighbors initially as sort of a new type of food bank on the east side, and you're expanding it, including a mobile food market, among other things.
That's what we're working towards. We're working towards an idea of a couple of months ago, I noticed that in Chicago, our former home, a person had gotten a CTA bus and turned it into a way to take vegetables to places like Inglewood where they don't have vegetables. And I thought, wow, that's a really cool idea. So, of course, me, I picked up a phone and I called them. So what was this all
being
about?
Being the shy retired guy
that I am.
Yeah.
And so they told me what they were up to. And I said, well, this is a great thought, but what if we did it one step further? Well, we all know food trucks, but what if we made a food truck an actual mobile market? Because a lot of the areas of this city are, we have, according to statistics from the USDA, we have 29 food deserts in this city. That means there's no real, people have to buy their stuff from Family Dollar or from the gas station.
Right.
So there's no real grocery
produce,
store. Produce, fresh meat.
And there have been a lot of community garden projects that have sprung up to deal with that, but it's sort of a patchwork approach to try to address it.
So we got together and said, well, what if we created this idea where we got a bus and we turned it into a mobile market? And it was like, so that's what we've been working on right now. And it's funny because now we're talking about the vegetable bus. The other day at the bridge, there's a bus behind the bridge over here in Springfield that is, let's go vegetables. So someone has got an old bus that they turned into a vegetable truck, which I'm like, yes, because that means someone's doing that part at least. It's great to see it's not on the road yet, because the other problem is you still got to get an ordinance written about that. Can we do it? Can we not do it?
Yeah, and the food, the basic food trucks have gone through a lot of hoops just to do what they do. So
exactly.
You've got to go through that same process.
Got to go through the same
yourself.
Process. And so we can't just walk into City Hall and say, this is what we want to do. We have to have it ready to show them this is what we... And I'm a visual guy, as you know. I like to show people what we're going to do. So we're trying to figure out a way to do that. And so this is what the idea is. Let's do this. And so that's the whole process. It's a process. It's not like you can just walk in and do it. I mean, in Chicago, the mayor got the government, the federal government, to give them money to start these two buses they have that are doing the vegetables.
Is it working?
It's working. It's working very well. They're out every day.
So you're at the very beginning of this in Jacksonville.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's go to Alex in Orange Park. Hi, Alex.
Hello. I just wanted to make a quick comment. Actually, last year I was looking for a place to rent around here in Jacksonville and noticed, like your speaker said, you know, you're paying $800-$900 a month for an apartment that's maybe, you know, 600-700 square feet. I actually recently rented a mobile home that's, you know, 1,200 square feet and I'm paying $650. A lot of people think there's a stigma against mobile homes, but nowadays they make them very nice and you're paying half the amount in square footage. So, for lower-income people, I think it's a great option, and I really hope that they develop more mobile home housing developments around Jacksonville.
Thanks, Alex.
And the mobile home idea is a great idea, but my question is, as I know for people who live in mobile home parks, they also pay lot rents. So is that also his mortgage payment and his lot rent together? Because you can, you know, sometimes lot rents are $300 a pop too. So you got to be careful. Some places combine the two, and that's what
and
you find.
A mobile home can get blown away during a storm, well, among other things.
So. You know, like Maynard said at the end of Cars, I'm as happy as a tornado in a trailer park. Because it's the truth. It seems like tornadoes look at trailer parks and go, hey, let's kill it.
Okay, Troy on the south side. Go ahead, Troy.
I just wanted to make a couple comments about, low-income people. And we all know that we've lost a lot of jobs in the industrial sector. But one of the reasons I think the United States is an expensive place to do business is we've got basically a hidden tax on us all, and that is the cost of the legal system. Everybody's getting sued for this. All the ads on the TV are attorneys, and that's costing all of us money, which leaves less money for employers to actually pay their employees.
Thank you for the call, Troy.
And see, I've never looked into that, but that's possibly true. I mean, I grew up in a blue-collar family. My dad was a journeyman welder. He always worked because there was always work. Now a lot of the trades are disappearing because it's not just because they're disappearing because there's not jobs. It's that the younger generation doesn't want to be in the trades. Okay. They don't realize that you can make good money at the trades. I love Mike Rowe because he's trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
He's letting you know, hey, look, not everyone's going to go to college. Let's do something else. My dad told me, you're not welding. You're too smart. You're not going to weld because it's whatever. But I learned to weld because it was something I wanted to do. But yeah, we need some of these kids, and there's jobs there, but it's just no one's there to fill them. Unfortunately, in this town, this is a very, I don't really think this is an industrial town so much as it is a tech town, a transportation town, a logistical town.
Right.
So you've got to be able to do
that. And that's great for high-paying jobs.
Yes.
Not so good for working blue-collar wage jobs.
Exactly. And, you've got a lot of people who are working retail and restaurants. And, again, what we were talking about with transportation, if you got someone who works at the beach and doesn't have a car, it takes them an hour to 2 hours to get to the beach every day to get their job.
And maybe after the storm, they're out of their car.
Exactly.
There
were a lot of cars that were lost, especially if you lived anywhere that was in a flood zone, which we saw. I saw it. You saw it. Downtown Jacksonville flooded.
Yeah.
That was surreal.
Yeah. All right. Carolyn is actually in her car. She's along I-95. Hi, Carolyn. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I've lived in both Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and been on both ends of the spectrum. And I really think, there's so many derivatives that you can run down with this problem, from global to national economics. But I think for Jacksonville in particular, it really needs to come down to sort of a paradigm shift. And I think you make that in small visual changes. Kind of like if you want to lose weight, you do something for 2 weeks and it works and you're more likely to continue. We need to clean up these neighborhoods. And when I say clean up, I mean make the houses nicer, make them affordable, bring in grocery stores. And we just need to make that investment in the people and in our community, not unlike it would be your own living room. And I think if we can just not look at the dollars and look at the investment and look at what's the right thing to do, it could get momentum, and then companies like Amazon will want to be here, and more money will come. But unless we get over the fear factor and just start to embrace the problem and see it for what it is and commit to fixing it, all of us in smaller communities can make smaller differences, and that's important. But we're not, I really believe that this city could do it, and I've lived in different cities, and I really think it could. And I think it starts with the infrastructure. We need to get, the politicians to really open some floodgates and start saying yes, like you were saying, to redoing these housing. We've got to have safe, affordable communities with food and education.
Thank
Otherwise,
you. Yeah.
We can't call
Thanks, Carolyn. Thanks, Carolyn. I appreciate all of those thoughts. And we're getting similar thoughts on Twitter. Here's one from Matt. La Villa's United Voice, a new organization, is working on getting more affordable housing in downtown. One project is already under construction. Jody tweets the show, Barry Good Farms is working on eliminating food deserts in Jacksonville. Thanks for that. Here's another tweet. You also need to talk about how not having electricity is also a path to losing your home.
There's a prime example there. JEA no longer does deferred billing. In other words, you used to be able to call JEA and say, I can't pay my bill. Can I stretch it out? They stopped that process. The My Neighbors program, where we all paid into, and you could go to them and say, I need help this month. You now have to call 211 at the United Way. Then you have to go all the way out to the city complex that's off of Art Museum Drive or somewhere out there, and you have to hopefully get an appointment to get a voucher to pay your electric bill. Well, again, if you don't have a way to get there, and if you're not there by a certain time. So JEA has made it very, very hard now. They created a program called My Way, which it's interesting because it's pay-as-you-go electricity. Some of the people that we've been helping have that. And it's kind of weird because you basically pay, you know, you can pay like $100 and then you have to watch how your electricity. And in some ways it's nice because you get to see how you can conserve energy, which I like that idea. But it would be nice if JEA would try to work a little bit with everybody to try to bring back some of the programs that helped people.
All right. So lots has gone into this discussion. Lots of great calls and social media feedback. How can people find you and be part of what you're doing?
I'm all over Facebook. I'm like a rash.
I wouldn't say that.
Some do.
But they just need to find you there. Do you have a website up yet?
We don't have a website up yet, but there is a My Neighbors Market on Facebook. And I think there's one other on there too. But or you can just look for me, Nick Thompson, and I've got links to go to that.
More to come. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Don't miss the live in studio performance from LA favorites Manhattan Murder Mystery. That's later in the hour. But up next, getting Duval school kids excited about STEM. How one local company is doing their part. Back in a moment.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Welcome back. Well, you know when you took a field trip when you were a kid and some were better than others? This is one your kids are going to like. They get to wear virtual reality goggles, tour a local plant, and have a lot of fun. But all the while, they're learning about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. This is a collaboration between the City of Jacksonville, JEA, our local public schools, and the local corporation CH2M. And it's happening Wednesday. Here with a preview, Karen Smittle. She's CH2M Florida Communications Manager. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Janelle Pemberton, an engineer and project manager with CH2M, and Alex Blahakis, career and technical education director with Duval County Public Schools STEM IT and Computer Science. Thanks for being here, ladies.
Good morning.
All right, let's begin with you, Karen. This is not the first time CH2M has partnered up with the city and JEA. This is a field trip, and kids at Jefferson Davis Middle School and Northwestern Middle School are going to get to come to your offices. What are they going to get to do?
Well, they're going to get to see what an engineer does every day. They'll get to experience all the different things from working with the groundwater, from building and designing facilities, all those different things. And we have our engineers that are so excited to talk to them about their own careers.
They'll also get to check out JEA, too. Is that correct, Jano?
They sure will. They'll get to actually experience what all the water resources are for the city, and they'll be able to see the water treatment plant and listen to Big Jim, right, Janelle?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk then about how this came together and why this is so important for the Duval County Public Schools.
Well, actually, Pilar Duran, our area manager for Jacksonville and Gainesville, thought of this program. STEM, there are so many different STEM programs, but this initiative was a brainchild of Pilar, and she started it in Gainesville, and Karen can talk more about the other things that we're doing in the state of Florida. So Gainesville started first, and then Jacksonville got wind of it, and we're like, yeah, we got to bring this to Jacksonville. Uh-huh. And we connected with Alex, and she was so excited about the program, and we're so happy to be able to partner with JEA and Duval County Public Schools and the city of Jacksonville to, you know, encourage our young students about STEM. I'm an engineer, and when I was young, I got excited about STEM when I was in middle school and high school through similar initiatives. And I'm so happy to be a part of a program where we can inspire young kids, especially my STEM girls, to pursue, you know, different exciting career paths.
These kids will be able to see a potential career path for themselves. It's a completely different thing than just learning about something in class.
It really is. And last year, we had a young lady who went to the field trip, and she actually got interviewed later on, but she said that she wants to be an engineer. And I know she would have not arrived at being that, you know, interested in an engineering job if it wasn't because of the field trip. So we were really proud that the field trip had a big, you know, outcome in the little girls.
It's not often that a field trip for kids involves all of these agencies, Karen, the Duval County Public Schools, the City of Jacksonville, JEA, and a big corporation, CH2M. CH2M has a major presence in Jacksonville. Tell us a little bit about your company.
Well, CH2M is 25,000 employees, and we're worldwide. We're based in Denver, but we have offices all over the place. And one of the big things that we do, Melissa, is we get involved in our communities. We want to get involved, and we know that someday there will be a shortage of engineers, so we want to make sure that the kids that are interested in STEM careers know about them. And someday we'd like to hire them. So we're very interested in getting them involved at this age.
Here's a question for the Duval schools. Someone just tweeted the show. What about STEAM? Putting the A in STEM for art, adding art to the equation. What about that?
Yeah, and it's interesting. We were just having a conversation about the art component and the critical thinking skills and the actual design thinking that is involved in being an engineer. And therefore, we're excited that the kids actually get to see the construction of these particular water treatment plants and how they work so they can start to kind of think in that direction.
That's art and design.
Mm-hmm, it sure is.
So it all works together. It's a cool field trip for some lucky kids this Wednesday as the city, JEA, The Duval County Public Schools and CH2M partner together to promote STEAM education. Alex Blahakis with Duval County Public Schools and Jane L. Pemberton and Karen Smittle, both with CH2M. Enjoy this week. Thanks for giving us this update as we cover STEAM education on the First Coast. Have a great week.
Thank you.
In a moment, Cole Pepper as the Jaguars head to the bye week in first place.
Exciting new changes are coming to your weekend. 89.9 WJCT has added Freakonomics Radio, Sunday afternoons at 1, followed by Planet Money and How I Built This at 2. For more information and to see the new weekend schedule, go to wjct.org/weekends.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2.
Many people in Jacksonville never come in contact with those outside their core communities. WJCT is embarking on a journey called Beyond the Core to start a citywide conversation about what unites the people who call Duval County home and what makes our smaller communities unique. We might have an upcoming Beyond the Core listening event in your neighborhood. Check WJCTnews.org to find out.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood live in King for a Day, Sunday, November 26th at 2 p.m. in the beautiful Florida Theater. Featuring dance numbers, new songs, surprise guests, and more. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Welcome back. Well, the Jaguars dominated over the weekend in Indianapolis. Now they head to the bye week in first place.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now with more about the Jaguars' most unlikely season. Good morning.
It's been a wild season, and by the way, my apologies, fighting off a little laryngitis, so bear with me if I have an up and down.
You've been working hard. You're the hardest working man in the sports business.
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly I sound like it today anyway. So let's start with the offense. Jaguars played without four offensive starters yesterday. Leonard Fournette didn't play with the ankle injury sustained the previous week. Brandon Linder, the center, has been out for a while. Allen Robinson has been out since early in the season. And then Cam Robinson on the second offensive play of the game went down with an ankle injury. Despite that, the Jaguars dominated in the first half. T.J. Yeldon filling in for Fournette went over 100 yards in his first game action all year. Blake Bortles passed for over 300 yards. Just lost to one fumble the Jaguars did. So, I mean, offense, terrific. Special teams, after a terrible game last week, bounced back with just about of a perfect game. Punting. Punt returns, kick returns. Josh Lambo, the new kicker, made all his field goals and extra points. Perfect. All right, so there's a check mark.
Yeah, sure.
Now let's talk about the defense. More of the same. 10 sacks. Jaguars became just the second team, the third team in NFL history to have two 10-sack games in the same year. Think about that. Wow. Since 1940, there have been three teams that did that. The 84 Bears, this was the year before they were the Super Bowl Shuffle Bears,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the 1967 Oakland Raiders.
Oh, my gosh.
Now the Jaguars are in that category. They didn't force a turnover, but they did have their first shutout since 2006, 27-0 the final. Calais Campbell now with 10 sacks on the season as well. That is his career high, and we're only seven games into the season. When the Jaguars get a lead, they can be a dominating team. If they have to play from behind, they're in trouble. When they play on the road, they're in great shape.
They're doing great on the road.
So here, if the playoffs started today, the Jaguars would be the on the outside looking in, but only just barely on a tiebreaker with the Titans. So if the Jaguars wind up beating the Titans second time around, who knows? This is a team that you can legitimately be talking about as they go into the bye week here as a playoff contender. And they're going to start the month of November in playoff contention. When's the last time I said that?
Pretty exciting. Let's hope the streak holds. All right. It's Florida Georgia Week, officially.
Yes. And with all it, with that, all the trappings that come with the Florida Georgia game, let's talk about on the field for a moment here. Georgia looks like the dominant team, number three in the country, unbeaten. Florida is struggling. And so you'd look at this on its face and say, oh, it's obviously going to be a Georgia win. But this series has had some crazy things happen through the years. And that's part of what makes this such a great game is the unpredictability of this matchup, particularly when Georgia is very good and Florida is looking for something to hang their hat on for the season. This is the kind of game that Florida tends to find its way and somehow get a victory. That being said, both teams coming off bye weeks, they should get healthier. I think Georgia's going to be tough to stop this year. We'll see how it all plays out on Saturday, though, at Everbank Field.
And the RV City will be springing up around this building any minute now. All right, the Armada in a draw with the Cosmos.
It was the highest scoring match in the NASL this year, 4-4. Now, the Armada needed to win out to assure themselves a spot in the playoffs. Now they need to win on Saturday against San Francisco and get some help. Yeah, the Cosmos need to lose to Puerto Rico in order to make it in. But here we are, the Armada going down to the last week of the season with playoff hopes on the line. Season high 7,600 in attendance yesterday at Hodges Stadium as well to close out the home portion of the Armada schedule.
Let's talk about the Icemen. I saw a lot of people over the weekend posting that they were having a lot of fun at the game, but they lost their first two at home.
Yeah, and one of the interesting storylines, I think, with the Icemen this time around with the hockey team is to see how much wins and losses are going to matter to them in terms of attendance and interest. Some sports in this town, winning absolutely matters. Obviously, the Jaguars is a big impact there. The Sharks, winning has impacted there. The Armada, to a certain extent. Jumbo Shrimp, winning not as important. It's more about
the fun of it.
Yeah, the fun of
the
it going
family
out there.
Fun.
And there are so many games for the Jumbo Shrimp, and there are a bunch of games as well for the Icemen. It's going to be interesting to see how the market kind of responds to that. But through the first two games, I've heard they've got a fan group that's already sprung up, the Jack's Ice Puckheads.
Really?
And so there's they're building a good fan base, and they've had good attendance the first two games around. They will take on Atlanta on Thursday, then they aren't back home again until mid-November.
So with all of the sports action going on this fall, I'm really not surprised that you're kind of a little rough in voice, Culpepper. I appreciate you even coming in today.
Thank you. Well, and of course, the high school football on Friday night, and that's ramping up as we get closer to the playoffs. I'm playing hurt.
Yeah, exactly right, which you always do because you are a total pro and a regular contributor to this program every Monday. And every Monday in the second half hour, you can get regular updates on all the weekend sports news and notes from our own Culpepper. You can follow him on Twitter at Culpepper. You can also download the Sam and Cole podcast. That's still a thing, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. And we'll have one up probably as soon as I can have a long conversation again.
Download that. And in a moment, don't miss it. A live in studio performance from LA favorites Manhattan Murder Mystery. It's a preview of their concert tonight in historic Springfield at the Shantytown Pub. They're a cult favorite if you like The Replacements, The Pixies, Arcade Fire, Nirvana. You're going to like these guys. Manhattan Murder Mystery in just a few moments on the show. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Africa is America's number two site for special operations personnel. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly says their mission is clear.
They're helping those partners be better at fighting ISIS in North Africa so that we don't have to send large numbers of troops.
An investigation is underway after four service members died in Niger. What exactly are we doing in Africa? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, the life and death of Eric Garner. Matt Taibbi has a new book about the man who died in 2014 at the hands of police.
He's on the ground. He has people on top of him. He has an arm around his neck, and he's saying 11 times, "I can't breathe," and that's how he dies.
Taibbi examines Garner's life, the police practices that led to his death, and the legal battles that followed. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Shrimping and shrimp boat building have been important industries in St. Augustine for more than a century. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with maritime historian Brendan Burke, co-author of the book Shrimp Boat City. We'll discuss WPA photos of a conch settlement and the lynching of World War I veteran Oscar Mack. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
As opioids flooded America by the truckload, a top official at the DEA tried to stop the shipments.
Everybody was making money and people were dying.
The companies pushed back. So did his agency.
Cases would just sit and languish for weeks, for months, for a year.
How the government failed to stop an epidemic on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, the Los Angeles-based Manhattan Murder Mystery formed in 2008, and they've since developed an onstage intensity that's undeniably solid, not to mention totally infectious, rowdy, and engaging. This cult favorite has been called post-punk and compared to everyone from The Replacements and The Pixies to Arcade Fire and Nirvana. They're touring the country right now in support of their new album, Dumb, which is available on every major music platform. And we've got a special treat as Manhattan Murder Mystery join us live in studio, a preview of their show tonight at Shantytown Pub in historic Springfield. Manhattan Murder Mystery, good morning, guys. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having us. It's great to be here in beautiful downtown Jacksonville.
Good to have you on the show. Let's talk to a vocalist, a rhythm guitarist, Matthew Teardrop. Tell me a little bit about your music and the band. You guys formed in L.A., and you've built a cult following out there.
Oh, sure. We built a cult following. We're on tour right now. We've been on tour for a couple weeks, and we have a couple weeks more. We're going all over the country. We had a good time in Pensacola, hoping to top it tonight in Jacksonville.
You're going to be playing at Shantytown Pub tonight. That's at 6th and Main in Springfield. We've got a little preview. What are you guys going to be performing for us?
We're going to play a song. It's going to be a little louder later tonight, but we're going to do an acoustic version of I Always Think About Dying.
All right, here they are, Manhattan Murder Mystery.
Dying.
dying. I always think about 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 dying.
Manhattan Murder Mystery. Guys, thanks for coming into the studio this morning.
Thank you for having us here in beautiful downtown Jacksonville, Florida.
You can catch them tonight at Shantytown Pub. That's our show. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A's up next with a look at what is America's military mission in Africa. This has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.